over the last week, we have been thinking very hard about that, reflecting on what we need to be both saying and doing as a university. And it's clear to me in retrospect that our statement was not, it did not go far enough, and it was not clear enough. We did not, in that message, call out the brutal murder of Mr. Floyd. We did not say as explicitly as I now believe we should have said. We did not say that how clearly we abhor this kind of institutionalized violence. And we did not specifically say what is so important to affirm, that Black Lives Matter. And looking back on it, I think we were intending to make a statement that in some ways entailed those beliefs, but we were not explicit enough about that.
For those who say they have concerns or fears, they want to know where they can turn on campus if they feel they have become the victim of racial injustice or any injustice, or if they happen to witness it for somebody else. What do you tell them that the university has in place to address that and right that?
Oh, well, we have many different structures in place. I mean, I think a positive as we look forward is that institutionally we have created many of the structures to address these issues. What we need to do now, I think, is reinvigorate those in a way. But with, so we have the community diversity group, we have the Office of Diversity, we have a trustee diversity committee, and many different structures like that. Specifically for incidents of bias or perceived wrongs or actions of that sort. If you are a student, there is a procedure for reporting bias through the Dean of Students office, and those claims are always investigated and acted upon. If you are a faculty member, the same is true through the Office of the Dean of the Faculty and the Provost.
Going back to the initial contact on this, where you had been asked about making a statement and said that typically you don't, unless it particularly applies to higher education. If you could sort of walk me through your thought process on that, and I know these are kind of unprecedented times, but what was sort of your guiding principle on that to first leave it aside before taking it on, and then the initial statement that left some things out in the view of some?
Well, to the first part, when I was asked in an event about academic planning, when I was asked about this in the course of that event, initially I responded with what is my usual practice. And I did accurately describe that practice at that time, which is that as a university president, I typically do not make public statements about public issues. For example, I have very strong feelings about the injustice of the death penalty. I have very strong feelings against the killing in war. I do not articulate those feelings. I don't feel, or those beliefs. I don't feel that's my role as the head of a university, even though I feel those are deeply moral and ethical issues for our society. And so that's what caused me to initially respond in that way. What changed my perception about it is actually exactly what you just said, Eric. This is a pretty much an unprecedented time. And it became much clearer to me that we were really called upon to speak.
What are your main takeaways from this this entire experience in interaction with the students on this kind of a level? And I guess not just students, but you know, the university community.
Yeah, with the university community. Well, and then I'll also go, I was thinking you were asking another thing, which is takeaways from this whole this whole period in our national life. To the first, about my understanding of this university, I will say one thing which I think probably escapes most people's attention. I was actually named the real president of this university in the middle of November. And by the middle of March, there was no one on this campus. That is about 4 months, I guess, December or January. That's about 4 months. Mm-hmm. For one of those months, of course, it was the holiday season, and the campus was not in session. So that does mean that effectively I've been a member of this campus as its long-term president for about 3 months. The reason I bring that up is that I think typically, and in my earlier presidencies, I would have had many more opportunities to and time to build more personal relationships and understandings. Now, the Illinois Wesleyan community has been wonderful to me, and certainly a number of those relationships have come into being. But I would say that that is less true of the students. In my initial time here, I came as a one-year interim president, and it was very clear that my one-year assignment was primarily to address financial stability at the university. And that is that's a somewhat different job description from that of the long-term president. So I think the fact that the students haven't really had an opportunity to get to know me as well as I would like, nor I them, has probably contributed to this desire for them to understand more clearly who I am and where I stand. As a comparison, when I was the president of the College of Worcester in Ohio, I met every month with the student leaders of the various diverse groups on campus. We had a lunch in my office every month, and we could sit together and really learn from one another. And they helped me a great deal to understand what was going on campus and what their experience was. Unfortunately, there haven't been that many opportunities for that kind of personal relationship building here. So I think in some ways this is an opportunity that I haven't really had before to hear much more directly about the concerns of certainly our current students and also our alumni. I would have normally been in the course of about a two-year tour around the country, coming to speak with and learn from alumni. We held two of those events, and then everything had to be canceled. So I think there's a little bit of that, just pure logistic, in effect here. Okay. But what do I take away from the experience? I think it remains very clear, despite the fact that there hasn't been as much of an opportunity to build relationships, that the expectation here in this community, in the Illinois Wesleyan family, is that there will be very close communication. You know, students and alumni and faculty do not hesitate to reach out to me and tell me what they think and ask for my help. And that's really a good thing. You know, so that's what we'll be engaged in more and more as we go through this very dark period together. What I take away from the country is frankly a hope, Eric. We all know, those of us who have lived longer know even more, that these kinds of despicable incidents and killings and inhumane events have occurred over and over in our history. And it seems to be cyclical. We are appalled and we regret and we move on. And then it happens again and again and again. The outpouring of outrage and protest that we're seeing in at least 350 cities across this nation gives me some measure of hope that maybe we will finally not forget, that we will not just move on, that this could really mark a turning point. And I find that a very positive possibility.
If we could shift gears to the fall, what is the game plan at this point, or what kind of plans are under consideration to possibly return to in-classroom instruction?
Well, we have a lot of planning going on, Eric. We were just in meetings on this today. But I suppose, unfortunately, the first thing that has to be said by any college or university president is that my crystal ball is very murky. I believe none of us knows exactly how this pandemic will play out. Obviously, we try to understand what the epidemiologists are telling us about the potential wave after wave that we may experience and when those waves might occur. In the absence of any better knowledge or clearer knowledge, we have to try to plan for a return of our students and our faculty that is as close to normalcy as possible. That is a very tall order, and I'll tell you some of the specifics that we are looking at now. We have, I guess it's four, I may end up with five, I think we have four different planning groups currently. There is a group working on institutional planning, and that's taking into consideration things like, how will we handle dining? How will we handle, or what will happen with athletics and so forth, institutional planning. There's a group of particularly faculty who are working on instructional planning. How are we going to actually deliver courses? There's a group that is specifically concerned with health planning, naturally. What are the precautions and the protocols that we need to have in place? And there's a group working very hard on facility planning, because facilities are part of every aspect of the solution. How many students, how are we going to house students? Will they all be in single rooms? How will we deal with bathroom arrangements? How will we deal with classroom arrangements? We heard the very discouraging news today that as our facilities group analyzes our classroom space, together with the prescriptive, in place at least for now, of 6 feet of distance, many of our classrooms will only be able to handle about 15% of their capacity. So this is going to be an enormous challenge on every front. And then fifth, it is not a separate planning group, but it infuses every one of those aspects, is technology and electronics. So if we are going to deliver courses both in person and online, what platform are we going to use, or platforms? Is instruction going to be synchronous or asynchronous? How are we going to do examinations? Will those be virtual or in person? The questions are endless. Happily, I work with a wonderful group of colleagues and faculty members, and they're working very hard on these questions. But the planning is, it's a gargantuan task.
How has this impacted enrollment? I imagine a lot of prospective students are sitting on the fence waiting to see what's actually going to happen, and they may decide,
right,
if it's online only, maybe it's not worth it. How has that impacted it so far?
Well, that is a very good question, Eric. And again, we meet every day. My team meets every day. And we have since March to look at this whole array of issues. In this morning's meeting, we heard news, which has been very consistent news throughout this from the beginning of the pandemic in mid-March, and that is that our deposits continue to increase. Currently, our incoming class would, this will change, and of course we don't know how it will change, but our current incoming class, if it held steady at the current number, would be, I want to say about 40 students larger than it was a couple of years ago. So we don't understand it, frankly. I know from my conversations with other presidents that this is not happening at other colleges. I do know that everybody on our team, our admissions officers, our student ambassadors, our faculty, have been working very, very hard to be high touch with our students so that they are really communicating and again, building relationships, even though it's online. So I have to think that that's part of the success, that we are really reaching out to our students. But I am astounded that that's where we are. So even last night, more deposits came in.
All right. Anything further that you would like to add?
Let me see. Is there any other interesting aspect of our planning? No, I think overall, you know, when everyone had to make that sudden turn to being 100% virtual from, in the case of our type of college, being 0% virtual, you know, with that turn in the spring, I think we actually carried that out remarkably well for the circumstances. And so now what our faculty is really focusing on is learning from the experience they had and really trying to move ahead so that we can have our instruction in that medium be at the same level that we want to have it in our classroom.
So to make sure I'm clear, so there is a possibility for a...
I think this will be one of the many things that is a positive coming out of COVID, frankly. It will have changed all of our lives in many ways, and some of those will be positive new ways of doing things.
And some of those classrooms could be blended then, right? Some virtual and in-person at the same time? Gotcha.
In fact, that is we were talking just this morning about the systems that we're looking at that, you know, we're testing several systems that would enable us to, say, live stream an on-campus course.
I know this is changing every day, but is there a date where you need to move, you need to have the plans executed?
Well, one of the things that will be very complex is that as we rearrange these class schedules and so forth, and perhaps rearrange our academic calendar, it's likely that we will begin a little bit sooner and try to complete the instructional semester by Thanksgiving. You have probably seen that a lot of colleges are trying to do this. As we try to do that and do all of this rearrangement of courses, that's a tremendous burden on just the logistics of registering and re-registering students. So I believe our registrar has indicated that we really must have that done by, say, mid-July.
Interesting.
So I would say that we're aiming to be able to let our students and families and faculty have more certainty as early as we can in July.